Welcome to Gardening Naturally with Jeff Ferris. Call or text Jeff now with your gardening and landscape questions, 512-836-0590.
Hey, good morning, gardeners. Gonna be an interesting day. I woke up to rain this morning, really surprised. When I say rain, let's just say I may have had to turn my windshield wipers on if I was driving. Maybe. That's how much rain we got. But these little scattered blobs are going around the area. Right now, Bastrop is getting rain. I say that so lightly. They're getting mist, okay? That's about how much is falling right now. Again, the only problem with these little itty-bitty rainstorms is they get my car wet, but it's not enough water to actually rinse the dirt off. So I come out looking worse after a rainstorm than I do, you know, after these kind of rains, than I would if it was a regular storm. Oh, well, my plants are loving it, keeping the soil moisture where it should be. This little bit of rain will soak into the mulch and slowly work its way down to the soil. We'll take it. Every drop counts. Going to be a pretty decent day today, a little mix of sun and clouds. 84 for a high, that and probably really humid. It's getting warmer. It's getting warmer. I really wish we could get another 2 or 3 weeks of having to put on a jacket to go outside. But not in the cards. Not in the cards. Disappointing. Anyway, yesterday was out, and I had put stakes in the ground for a new tree that I had planted. Now, this tree was half an inch in diameter trunk. Yeah, really small, but it was more than 6 feet tall. It looked really good. Lots of leaves on it. Looked like it was going to be a happy tree. So we staked it, but we didn't tie it up. So here's this tree wiggling in the wind, bending over in between the stakes. They were pretty much useless. So we went out yesterday and tied it up using paracord and some short pieces of garden hose, little 2-inch pieces, that they were the ones being held against the actual tree. Doing my best trying not to damage the trunk where I had attached the cord. And we attached one and held the tree and go, oh, it leans this way a little. So we'd attach another and went, oh, now it leans this way a little. And the third one let us balance it all out. And I now have a tree that's going straight up and down. And like I said, this is a narrow tree. This was not this big, you know, 30-gallon box tree. This was a little 5-gallon small tree, and it will grow up and look just fine. Here's a weird thing about it. The place we got it at had a tag on it and called it a Mexican white oak, but other places would call it a Monterey oak. What's the difference? Where you're standing, I guess. Whoever's selling it decides what they're going to call it. Both are correct. Both are correct. Another example. I have an oak tree that's called a Canby oak. And it's been stellar this year. It's really growing big and it looks very good. But the Canby oak is also known as a Sierra red oak. We have these problems. So this is why we use Latin naming. Nobody changes the language anymore when we're speaking Latin. My Mexican white or Monterey, its root name is actually Quercus, which means oak, polymorpha. That is the name of a Monterey or a Mexican white. So that's the way you tell, am I really getting the plant I'm wanting? Or did somebody just put a name on the tag? Figure out what you want and then look up its Latin name. Now, when we got it all staked, got the surface dug, you know, made the hole, put the dirt back in, put a little fertilizer in there, we mulched it. And you should do the mulching. Brand new trees, 100-year-old trees, should be mulched. It helps preserve consistent water for the tree. The tree won't have issues where, oh, it dried way out and I'm going to water it now because I remember. And as for the type of mulch, I had some trees taken down and they were ground and they left all of the grindings, all of the mulch on my property in a big pile. And we have been working for years slowly taking that pile and spreading it in our beds, around our plants, etc., as a mulch. It's been breaking down. It looks good. It's been doing its job really well. What kind of mulch should you use? Well, let's make something clear. Use a mulch. It is less important the kind you use rather than the fact that you have a mulch. Mulching keeps the soil cooler in the summer. It blocks the sun and prevents weeds from growing up. It acts as a blanket to keep moisture in the soil, to make the evaporation more consistent. It is nothing but benefits. And the fact that the mulch will slowly, over time, break down, will break down, providing nutrients to the tree. You have to refresh it every once in a while because, in fact, it does break down. But it's not important what kind of mulch you use. You like the real dark Texas hardwood mulch. Okay. You like cedar chip. You like pine bark. It doesn't matter what kind. It is more important to have a mulch. So you really get the advantage of being able to pick a mulch that also provides the appearance you want. Let's say that you want a real dark brown mulch. Okay, you can find a real dark brown mulch and you can use it. So do you need to mulch? Yes. Priority number one, put a mulch down. What kind of mulch? I don't know. Pick what works for you. What do you like the appearance of, the color of? Mulch is the important part. The kind is much less of an issue. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I need to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Listen, I just got texted a picture, and I can't believe it myself. But we're talking about mulch a minute ago, right? It doesn't matter what kind, mulch. You can use the color you want, the style you want, whatever. But you got to mulch. Well, I was talking about staking my trees, and I probably left out a really important comment here. You never stake the tree by tying it tight against the tree. Whether you're using wire, clothesline, I used paracord. I had a big roll of paracord, which is a fancy string, basically. And I put a sleeve over it, an old cut-up piece of garden hose. So what's touching the tree is kind of a protective bumper. And I don't pull it tight against the tree. I wrap it around the tree. Both ends of the cord went to the stake, and I tied it at the stake. You should always be able to put your finger between what's holding the tree and the trunk. It should never be cinched tight against the bark. What'll happen is the loop you make when you tie it against the bark is never going to get bigger, but the tree is. And you'll wind up, if you don't go out and look at it every once in a while, you'll see that that binding, whatever you're using, will start to cut into the tree and girdle it. And that is a bad thing. So if you have a staked tree, and it's been staked a bit, if it was correctly staked, meaning that it was not tied to the tree itself, was more like a loop holding it and pulling it back, you're probably okay if you can get your fingers in there. But if it was tied directly to the tree, wrong. That is not how you tie up a tree. I'm looking at the pictures that were sent to me, and it's like, who did this? It was an arborist. You shouldn't have to stake a tree. If you're staking a tree, I'm doing one because it's super small. I need it to establish. I need it to get its roots in the ground. I need it to hold itself up in the correct direction. It's got a very small trunk. So I staked it. You shouldn't really need to have a staked tree more than a couple years. And your tree should never wind up with cuts in it. That is, the girdling of the tree is very bad. It's very bad. It really harms the tree. And gives it a weird appearance. You know, it's like, how did it get this line across it? Where'd that come from? Well, it came from being improperly staked. If you have a staked tree, take 5 minutes today, just 5 minutes, to go out and check the stake and see at the point that it touches the tree, is there still room there? In other words, can you get your finger between the staking material, the rope or whatever, and the tree? If you can, you're probably okay. How long has it been staked? This is usually not a permanent situation. You want the tree, you don't want the stakes. So you should be able to, after a couple of years, shake the tree. Literally grab it, see if it's secure, and determine for yourself, does it need to be staked any longer? Because if it doesn't, you can take those stakes off, pull the stakes out. Guess what? You get the beauty of just the tree, not these metal bars sticking up in the air. Sometimes I know landscapers that are still burying trees, making volcanoes up the trunk with mulch. And we know not to do that. We've got 20 years of horticultural work going, look, don't pile up mulch. They still do it. Not sure why. And we know when we stake a tree, if you wrap something around it tight and you don't loosen that or check it, it will not take long before the tree will try to grow larger than the binding and will leave nastiness in your tree. So take 5 minutes today. Go look at any stake tree you may have. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. I'm coming to the bottom of the hour. We need to break for the news. I'll catch you on the other side.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone. This is Dennis. Dennis, what can I help you with?
Yes, good morning. On the tree staking concept, we've been using for many years that green flexible florist tape, or whatever you want to call it, arborist tape. It comes in a green roll that you can buy anywhere. And
yes,
it stretches kind of well. And we've been using that for some of the pomegranate trees that we are having come back. And I'm wondering now, since we didn't tie it tight against the trunk of the little tree, but it's rather loose, and we take it off to a stake. Is this going to cause a problem?
Probably not. You're using a product that is actually designed. If you notice, if you were to take a piece of it and tie it to a stick, you got to work, but it'll stretch. You can get spacing in there. It's designed so that as the plant grows, that tape expands. So it's a good product for what you're looking at. It will slowly break down with exposure to sun and temperature and things like that. So it's probably going to reach the point where the tree is going to wind up breaking the tape. And that would be at a time when it's probably good to remove it then. You can use it on your trees. A lot of people use it in the vegetable garden. I mean, it's a great tape to hold a plant without crippling the plant, without crimping it off like that and not allowing the plant to expand. It is a good product for what you're using it for, and it works fine. It's still a good idea to take a minute every quarter or however often you look at it to always check and look, is it still doing its job? Do I see it girdling any of the plant? Because probably won't. It'll wind up stretching and doing its job and still protecting the plant.
Okay, I feel much better about that because it's easy to work with. And we've never had a problem, and I know what you're talking about, the girdling. I'm looking at a tree right now in this parking lot that's got a severe girdle on it. And, of course, we've never done anything like that. And as the various plants get older and can stand on their own, we take the green tape off. Okay, so I feel much better. Thank you.
You bet. You were doing it right all the time. Thanks
all
for
right.
the call, Dennis. Let's go to the phone. This is James. James, good morning. What can I help you with?
Morning. I have a question about assassin bugs.
Mm-hmm. They're good guys.
The people that I get my beneficial insects from, Arbico, has an assassin bug egg you can get. They go from hundreds to thousands, and the other people I talk to are trying to scare me off of them because they have a tendency to bite if you handle them rough. But what I think would work really well for me in my pepper house is they stay put when they're released. And that's something I'm looking for aphid control. I can't really release a lot of eggs in there because I do have a little bit of fire ants up there at that pepper house. So I was thinking the assassin bug might be something that would keep my aphids under control. Do you have any experience with them, Jeff?
I do have experience with them. I haven't purchased any. I have had an environment where they show up in. Now, I have known about the fact that they are a bug that can really give you a good, we should say sting. It's not really a bite because they have this sharp proboscis they use to attack a bug with. But they can give you, they can tag you and it'll hurt. Now, it's not quite like a bee sting or something, but you'd want to avoid it. But I don't know anybody who's going around picking up the bugs. Know what I mean? If you see one, okay, great. Let it do its job. But you shouldn't have to be handling them probably at any time. If they're going to take care of themselves. They are a very effective predator. So that is something that will do what you need it to do.
Yeah, I'm having real hard luck releasing ace lacewing eggs because the fire ants like to dine on them. And I have ant pros up there at that pepper shade house, and they do keep the ants down, but I still have ants up there, so the lace wings are out of the question. And the only other thing that the girl at the Arbico recommended was the assassin bugs, but they're going to be on the interior of the plant working on the aphids. They're not going to be out there where I'm picking chilies, right?
Correct. They are not somebody who, like a lacewing, would fly away. So they're going to stay local for you. They're less likely to, you put them out there and they're like, oh, I'm going to move on here. No, they're going to stay where they were put for the most part.
Yeah, that's what it says in the advertisement. But what really impressed me was their range of operation is 55 degrees to 110 degrees. And that's the kind of bug I'm talking about.
That's a tough guy because we're definitely going to be in that temperature range soon. So if they're still doing their job, they're worth it big time. And you know, James, there is actually a milkweed assassin bug specific to milkweed, and it attacks the aphids we find on some of our native milkweeds, those really yellow oleander aphids. So assassin bugs can be really pretty specific to what you're getting, and they're also voracious. They just, hey, food, let's go eat. And they will help keep down the aphids.
Okay, Jeff, thanks for taking my call and answering my questions. You've made my mind up that that's something I really need to get ordered when the time comes.
Yeah, especially if they work in that temperature range. There are a lot of beneficials, but not all the beneficials can handle the high heat. So they're going to help you out there.
The advertisement says that once they go into their second instar, whatever that is, they have a sticky substance that they produce on their legs, and they become a walking sticky trap. So I didn't know that about them either.
Yeah, what an instar is, James. Imagine generation one, generation two, generation three, etc. They start off as a certain looking type of bug. Then they have an instar, which is basically a fancy word for molting. And when they get done molting, they're a slightly different type of bug. And this happens through their lifespan. So an instar, and I'm being really generic here, is kind of like a molt. We go from one size to the next, and they're growing up, basically. So that's what's going on. And I wasn't aware about the sticky trap part. That makes them even more interesting to me because they're not specializing in a certain bug. They're pretty much getting anything that comes by. That works for me.
Yeah, that's what the advertisement says there. You don't want to mess with this guy. He'll get you, man.
Well, sounds good to me, James. I need to keep an eye on that. I try to get the ones that show up on their own, but I'll remember that if I'm starting to have issues with pests, that is a plant that I can use. A bug.
Yeah, I'm for sure going to release them. Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for the call, James. Yeah, folks, there you go. That's something we need to consider. There are places where you can buy beneficial insects. And there are so many beneficial insects. There are ones specific for only a certain bug, and there are ones that are very, very generic. They'll eat anything. That way you don't have to spray stuff. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. Gotta take a break for the program, and I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. James was talking about beneficial insects, and there are places where you can literally order a beneficial insect. They'll send you the eggs. And they'll give you instructions on what to do with them. And you put them out on your properties and the eggs will hatch. And then you have this beneficial insect on your property. Wasps, beneficial wasps are always on order. Green lacewings, didn't know you could get assassin bugs from them, but that is always a positive. There's ones called minute pirate bugs. And, of course, everybody's going to go, oh, I want ladybugs. No, you don't. No, you don't. They may not provide ladybugs. It kind of depends on where they're getting them from. And the reason for that is that ladybugs, people used to sell the wrong kind of ladybug. It was one that was not native, and it was wiping out our native ladybugs. So you can skip that, all right? You can get praying mantis egg cases, and you can release praying mantis, and they are, before we say they're a beneficial insect, let's just say that they're an equal opportunity insect. A praying mantis will eat anything it can put in its mouth. Bigger praying mantises are known to attack hummingbirds. And when? So praying mantis will go after bad bugs. But a praying mantis will also eat good bugs. They're just this garbage truck when it comes to what they eat. Naturally, you should be able to find praying mantis in your property. If you're not seeing some of these insects, you're spraying too much. You're spraying the things that will wind up killing them. And when you kill beneficial insects, guess what? You just volunteered to take over their job. So if you want to do that work, if you want to go out there and have to be the one to get rid of the bad bugs, go ahead. But there's probably already an insect out there doing the work, getting rid of bad guys. It's interesting what James was saying about the green lacewing eggs. They're very unique. They stand out, literally, because there's this little hair that goes straight up as the egg at the end of the stalk. And the reason for that is that the female can lay a row of eggs, and they're on a stalk because when the insect hatches, the insect eats the eggshell, then it eats its way down the stalk. It gives everybody a time to get away because they are so voracious that they'll eat their neighbor egg. So it gives everybody an opportunity to hatch and get away and go get food. And lacewing larvae look like horror movies. They are some creature out of a horror movie, and they are really effective. They can eat an insect twice its size. So it is it's great to have these beneficial insects. You don't have to use toxic sprays to have a great garden. Let's go to the phone here quick. This is Christy. Christy, what can I help you with?
Hi. I have a Mexican plum that's not very large. It's probably about, 6 or 7 feet tall. And I've had it for several years. The this year, it's only has about 7 or 8 blooms on it. And the rest of the limbs seem to be covered in baby snails. It's really gross. You scrape, it has all these little bumps, and when you scrape them, they seem to be snails, and you can squish them, and they, you know, they're snails, I think.
Okay. There is a simple, easy-to-use product that can kill the snails. It is called Sluggo, S-L-U-G-G-O. It is a bait that actually attracts the snails. When they eat it, it will kill them. Now, it is safe to use, not going to affect the ground, not going to affect anything but the snails. And if somebody comes by and eats the snail, it's not going to hurt the person that, or the animal that ate the snail. It's fairly fast. You get a little 1 pound shaker, and it looks like you're shaking out. It'll almost look like these little tiny pellets. They survive a rain, and they will really reduce the number of snails you have.
Okay, so I just sprinkle that on the ground around the tree then.
Yep, that's all you'll have to do. There's no spray, and you can't really sprinkle it on the tree as in the branches because it won't stay there.
Right.
But it will keep the snails from crawling up the tree.
Okay, right. Yeah, I considered covering the area or sprinkling diatomaceous earth around the area because I've used that for snails before, but I'll try Sluggo. So,
yeah,
I mean, But since there are only a few blooms on the tree, do you think the limbs that where the snails are, do you think they could be dead?
You'll have to find out. If those branches are brittle, if you scrape off the bark and there's no green underneath, yeah, that branch could be dead. Mexican plums are not long-lived trees. They're really susceptible to things like fruit tree borers and snails and other things. So get rid of the snails first. Make sure the tree is getting what it needs in terms of water and fertilizer, and then see if it doesn't come back. Christy, I'm up against a news break. Thank you for the call, folks.